The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Be a fine night tonight, always a special evening when we get to spend some time with William Mills Tompkins, Bill Tompkins, who has led, without question, one of the most unique and remarkable lives that we have ever heard about on this or any other program. And let me invite all of you, wherever you are around the world, to go and listen to Bill's earlier interviews and conversations. They're really conversations is what we're doing here. They're all posted, free listens, on the right-hand side at rents.com. Just scroll down below the Fukushima boxes, and you'll find Mr. Bill Tompkins, and all of his visits are there for you in pure digital excellent sound. And take a listen. They're each one a journey. They take you to places that in many ways and in many cases you'd never even imagine. He has had a life, as I've said, that would make many major motion pictures. Bill's story is without question one of the most stunning and enlightening I've ever heard in the near 24 years of having the honor of hosting and producing this program. So do listen to the programs. They're all archived for you. Tonight we're going to talk about many things, but including the ultra-secret Naval Air Weapons Development Facility in the Mojave Desert of Southern California called simply China Lake. We're also going to talk about Volume 2 of Bill's series of books. The first one is out, called Selected by Extraterrestrials. Volume 2 is in the works. And if you go onto the left-hand column at Rents and look for guests, you'll find them there. Look for Bill's name, and underneath Bill's name, there'll be a link that you can click on and take a look at some pictures of China Lake. We will get to that in a little bit, but I've done a little kind of a walk around of the facility, and you'll get the idea. Not much to see there above ground, and we'll leave it at that. Hello, Bill. Thanks for being here, and I hope you had a nice Christmas.
Hey, Jeff. Yes, we had a really beautiful Christmas. The weather was gorgeous here. Everybody had fun. Santa Claus was good. And I'm raring to go.
Very good. Now, let me ask you just a quick question. Back in the war years when you were involved in the debriefing of German Americans who were sent over to penetrate the Third Reich and come back with advanced secret data, which they did with alarming success in some cases, when you were doing that, we still had Christmas. We still had holidays. What was Christmas like during the war years? What are your memories of Christmas and New Year's? What was the holiday season like?
Well, actually, I guess it wasn't as good with us as it could be because we didn't get that chance to get with the family. And I was where we were operating in different stuff in the Navy.
Yeah.
But I think that the idea of celebrating Christmas and New Year's is very important, because we sort of lose this place that we think we're living in. And Christmas is not just fun for the children. It's fun for the family to get together, do things they love to do. And I think that's the best part of the whole holidays.
Of course, family. And we might mention here that Americans, in many cases during the war years, were separated from families, sometimes tragically permanently. But the same thing can be said for Germans and their families, and Austrians and Europeans. The war years were very difficult for everyone, and yet the traditions that made the Western Christian world such a special place are still there. We must protect them. We must restore them. And that's what many of us are hoping the Trump administration will bring about, a return to what made America the great nation that it was. It has been tarnished, but that can be cleaned with the proper time and the proper energy by the administration and by all of us working together. So, very good. Selected by Extraterrestrials, Volume 2. Where are you in that book in the process? This writing books is very difficult. Hard work.
Actually, we're about 45-50% into it.
Good.
And what I would like to do is just sort of touch on some of the chapters, because this relates to virtually everything that we have discussed on your program over the last month or so. And it goes into detail of what these events were and who was involved and the results.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just touch a few of them here.
Sure.
Jeff, first of all, I have to go back to the Navy operatives in 1942.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that they were young German individuals from German families here in the United States. They lived here. Their families had. They spoke English. They spoke excellent German, even dialects. And they had had continuous trips back to Germany. Many of the families were still in Germany.
Uh-huh.
They were essentially nice Germans. And I think we sort of get the wrong idea about German people. We think that they did the war.
Right.
They didn't have anything to do with the war.
Exactly.
It was Hitler and the SS. Now, what I'd like to explain, excuse me,
sure,
is that these young college graduate spies, engineering operatives, the best word, were lieutenants and lieutenant junior grades. They were young fellows. They were muscular, I have to say. I can't believe some of these fellows. Many of them were 6 feet. And they had a sense of humor. And I think that in the situation which was at the Naval Air Station San Diego, and they reported to Admiral Rickabotta, like we've said before.
Sure.
As soon as they got the information that they really had to rush back here and try to get us to do something with it. And so these fellows actually knew Germany, okay? They knew where the plants were. They knew where the production underground facilities were. They knew where the different research was, not just the V-2 facilities for rockets, but the larger vehicles, which were called A-9s, A-10s, A-11s.
Uh-huh.
And candles were almost, in fact, they were larger than the first NASA Apollo vehicles. Now, everybody thinks that the Apollo 5 vehicle went to the moon, okay? But way before that, we had three different levels of Apollo study vehicles.
Huh.
And so, actually, these vehicles were designed in Germany to be used as the Germans launching these vehicles intercontinental and dropping on New York and Washington and Los Angeles and essentially destroying many cities in the United States.
So
they never got that far.
That's right.
But that's what the intent was. So when the Germans came over after the war was over,
uh-huh.
It was called Paperclip.
Right. Let me, Bill, can you hear me all right? Can you hear me, Bill?
Yes.
Okay. I had a question about the rockets because people, they all remember V1 and the V2, the V2 being a single stage rocket, but the advanced rockets were multi-stage rockets to make it across the Atlantic, up into the upper atmosphere, and then re-enter and come down on target. Now, they would have had conventional explosives, apparently, but still, these were remarkable weapons. And you're suggesting, I think, that the Germans who came over here in Paperclip brought with them these 3- and 4-stage rocket designs, and we used them to predicate our Apollo lift vehicles, our boost vehicles, on. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and what we're saying is that even though NASA was doing this, and they'd come up with versions too, when the Germans came over with Paperclip, they brought with them thousands of documents
uh-huh.
of all of the research vehicles they had come up with, and then actually the ICBM vehicles.
Uh-huh.
And so, yes, they were multi-stage vehicles, unlike the V2, which is just a single stage rocket with a single engine.
Yeah, liquid
propulsion.
So I'm just saying
that the Germans essentially designed what the United States has been led to believe it was the Apollo 5 vehicle that went to the moon.
That's fascinating. We should also mention to people, Bill, that the Germans created and were NASA. Dr. Kurt Debus was the director of NASA for almost 15 years. They were staffed in almost every department by German technology, German genius, German science. NASA was a German project here in this country, was it not, pretty much?
Yes, and von Braun just happened to be a German, too. And I think that, again, we have a misunderstanding of the Apollo program, a misunderstanding of the missions of Apollo, and a misunderstanding of actually who did what and why it was successful. But I'd like to slip from that subject back to the Navy operatives, spies, who were reporting back to Admiral Riccobata, who had been selected to investigate extraterrestrials in Germany and the situation that was involved with extraterrestrial people supporting German programs during World War II.
Now, this is amazing because you're saying that these young men, and I don't know, maybe there were women, probably mostly men, but they were sent back to Germany to actually investigate the interaction between an off-planet extraterrestrial race, people, let's call them people, and the German military, the German government during the war. Now, this must have been just a stunner for these young people when they first learned about it. This is 1942, 1943. This is way back there.
Yes, and I want to clear up another area about Admiral Riccobata. Now, we've said before, and many of you listening to this remember it, that there was a problem with misinformation being implemented into all of the universities on this planet by reptilian slash Draco extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been doing this for roughly 5,000 to 6,000 years. So they operate out in the galaxy, and they do the same thing, which is control planets on different stars.
Mm-hmm.
And this effort goes back to people trying to visualize something that's very difficult to do. I'm going to make the statement, and everybody just has to back off and accept it. As recently as some 7 weeks ago, it was established that the universe as we know it is made up of 2 trillion galaxies. And I know we've said this before,
Yeah. But
it's hard to visualize just one of the extraterrestrial civilization people out there who have been influencing this planet and controlling it for 5,000 years.
I think
they do this on other stars, planets.
Was that two trillion galaxies? Is that the number?
That's as far as we can reach.
That's right.
Yes.
That's what we can see, and that's what we can capture with our varying forms of telescopic and radio telemetry. 2 trillion Milky Way galaxies. 2 trillion galaxies, not solar systems, galaxies. And you're going to sit here...
Every star has a solar system.
That's right. Every single star has a solar system. Some are binary systems with 2 stars and 2 trillion galaxies. The Milky Way, when you look up at night and see that band of beautiful stars that look almost like mist up there, they're so thick. You're looking right down the center stripe of the Milky Way galaxy, and there are 2 trillion like that out there.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so... when we try to talk about one particular extraterrestrial civilization, which we say are the reptilian guys. Now, what's a reptilian? These fellas, we've talked about this before, but maybe we didn't describe them well enough for the people that are not aware of this.
Oh, please go ahead. Yeah.
They are 8 and 9 and sometimes 10 feet. They're very muscular. But they have scales all over them, just like you would see in a very large lizard.
Right.
Or, if you want to make it closer, an alligator. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're not as rough as the alligators, but this is the group of thinking people who are one of our biggest problems here on the planet. And so they've been controlling this planet for all these years. And so we find ourselves in this position where they then came to our star mm-hmm. and went through the planets that are in this star, the solar system. They picked out several of them, and they looked at planet Earth, and I guess they did their numbers on planet Earth, and those were comparable to thousands of other stars' planets that they're already doing this with, controlling
uh-huh.
the planet.
Uh-huh.
So what we have here then is one species, the reptilians, and these fellows went to Germany, they sat down with Hitler, they made agreements to support Hitler in taking over the planet and essentially producing dozens and dozens of different kinds of extraterrestrial vehicles, which they're already using. Mm-hmm. They've been operating these vehicles for thousands of years. They keep updating them and building new ones.
Mm-hmm.
So Germany then was to take their industry, stop the normal industry, and when we talk about German industry, we're talking about primarily in mountain, not underground, in mountain factories, which are enormous. They're unbelievably enormous. And they've tapped into caverns that are actually all over the planet, but there's many of them in Germany, too. So they didn't have to do anything more than dig a tunnel. And they opened themselves into large tunnels. And later on this evening, we're going to talk about that program.
Okay.
But Germany then, during the war, had all these factories, and they cut back on the normal production of, say, tanks or production of different types of war equipment. Even cut back some of the submarines for the German Navy.
Right.
And so, because they planned on winning the war, taking over the planet, enslaving everybody on this planet, except some of the people that they didn't like, and they were just simply going to take all of them out. Because this is a normal plan that the reptilians have been doing on thousands and thousands of other stars' planets, just in this arm of the Milky Way galaxy.
Right.
Wow. So, we have these people operating an old, old program. It's old to them. It's completely unbelievable to us because we don't even understand it. So, what the operatives did, they had found out that the reptilians had been helping Germany design and build all different classes of extraterrestrial vehicles, even not just 30-foot or 50-foot or 250-foot flying saucers.
Discs, right.
But rectangular vehicles, cigar-shaped vehicles, all of them using anti-gravitational propulsion, which the reptilians have been using for years. It's nothing new to them. So they were helping the Germans do this, and then they even gave the Germans, like we've said before, brand new, shiny, 50-foot diameter UFOs and said, climb in. We'll show you how to run it. So these became training vehicles. So it was unlike our position at that particular time, World War II, 1942, where we didn't even know that there were extraterrestrials on the planet. The top SS knew everything. They knew everything. The German people didn't know it because they were never allowed to find out about this. So what we ended up with is dozens and dozens of young German-speaking spies, Navy operatives, operating all over Germany and all over the acquired countries where these underground facilities, not just production, but research in every aspect of what it takes to build production UFOs. Now, they had planned, because they cut back on a lot of the normal military equipment necessary to fight the war.
Right.
And they even cut back on the number of aircraft they were building, which, unfortunately for them, was a big mistake, because it took them longer, even with the help of the extraterrestrials, to learn how to do and get these vehicles to operate and then train people to operate them. So virtually, the war ended primarily because of the British and the Army Air Corps bombers who flew over and destroyed most of the country of Germany.
Right. So, not the production facilities, but the cities and the agriculture or the business. They destroyed the infrastructure of the country. That's what happened. They bombed them for years. You're right.
That's right, yes. And so they simply couldn't continue to operate.
Now, one thing I want to mention about technology, and a lot of you remember that the Messerschmitt 262 was available to Hitler in late 1941, early 1942. He was World War I in his experience, and he made a strategic blunder. He didn't understand the concept of air superiority and what that jet could do. He wanted to turn it into a Schnell bomber to quickly fly over and drop a bomb on London and fly back without being touched because it was too fast. It was only at the point in which Goering quit, and so did Adolf Galland, or Goering threatened to quit, but Galland actually quit. He was the director of Hitler's fighter forces because Hitler would not give him the 262 as an air superiority fighter. Well, Hitler relented when Adolf Galland quit and gave him that plane, but it was too late and too little in the war, and they ran out of time. Otherwise, they could have swept the skies with this plane had they worked on it properly. Hitler made some terrible mistakes for their side.
You're absolutely right, Jeff. They made a number of major mistakes. You have to ask the question, what was it that the reptilians saw in the SS as being what they wanted to essentially ally themselves to?
Good question.
This is one of the, wow. Yeah, this is one of the really hard ones to answer, because they could have simply gone to the United States, and they could have helped the United States, mm-hmm. or they could have helped any other country on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
They picked out Germany because that fit their agendas. It slid right in. And the whole structure of a disastrous type government of the SS controlling the planet, not just Germany, controlling the planet, and then they would put all these different UFO military vehicles in production mm-hmm. in the underground facilities
uh-huh.
and leave the planet. They would take over this planet, and they would have large squadrons of the German Space Navy operating with the reptilian Space Navy out in the galaxy doing the same thing to other stars' planets. Okay, so we have these young operatives now. They're going over. They find all this stuff out. None of them believe any of this, okay? Nobody believes it. And when they tried to present the different aspects of this to Admiral Riccobono, he still had difficulty accepting what they were reporting. It's not that he was ever calling them liars. He's just having a hard time accepting it.
You mentioned this before, Bill. He didn't have a basket to put this stuff in mentally, and he just didn't know quite what to do with it. And understandable. This is 1942. Wow.
Yes.
For sure.
But the other point, which we need to say again, because many people didn't hear this. They're listening to the program. Admiral Riccobono was not an American. He was from Australia. Mm-hmm. His family came over here. He went to school. He graduated from high school. He joined the Navy, and he worked his way up. Now, the very important part of this affects virtually everything, not just in the United States, but on the planet. Okay? Now, Riccobono never got influenced by incorrect information that was being taught in every university all over the planet. Hmm. To the people who got their PhDs. The information was being, and has been, being given incorrect information by the reptilians and the Dracos for a minimum of 5,000 years to every country on the planet. So you go, you finally study, and you manage to get your doctors in medicine, in astronomy, in science, in mathematics. I don't care what your doctors is in. You have been taught incorrect information in all the books for every country and every university on the planet. Now, Admiral Riccobata never had an opportunity to graduate from Annapolis. So the Secretary of the Navy, Forrestal, had been tipped off to this. Okay? So who did he select to operate and run this group of young spies going into Germany trying to find out what the extraterrestrials were really doing? Wow.
Yeah.
And so what took place was the responsibility from a telepathic message to the Secretary of the Navy of Forrestal. Don't give any of the 3 and 4-star admirals this job. Give it to a fellow that wasn't even an admiral 2 years ago. Okay? He was a 1-star. And when they gave him the job, they gave him another star. The first thing they did, that he did, was he went to Douglas Aircraft Company in Santa Monica.
Uh-huh.
And he talked to the people in the secret think tank. Wow. We've talked about that before, too. Then he went over to Lockheed Burbank. He talked to the guys over there that were essentially into aerodynamics with absolutely no knowledge of extraterrestrial.
Mm-hmm.
He went over to Northrop, mm-hmm. which was a Douglas El Segundo facility. And he talked to them. And he went across the street, L.A. Airport, and he talked to North American Aviation. Okay? He came back, and he did that before he took over his mission and as commander at Naval Air Station San Diego. That wasn't what his job was. His job was to find out what the extraterrestrials were doing helping Germany. Oh, my gosh. Okay? So what we find ourselves in then is that when, for whatever reason, I personally, as a 8 and 9 year old kid,
mm-hmm.
was driven to go over to the library and study astronomy, study aerodynamics,
mm-hmm.
study the U.S. Navy, find out what type of ships were being used, what was the mission, what were the ones that didn't work in World War I, what were the ones that didn't work way back in your Navy 240 years ago. So I got, for whatever reason, I got fascinated with this thing, and I started on the side building scale ship models of current Navy ships. And this ended up being by 16, I had 48 U.S. Navy battleship cruisers, destroyers, submarines, aircraft carriers, built.
You had recreated to scale, at scale, all the capital ships of the U.S. Navy at 16. This is, I'm wondering, Bill, do you think as you look back on this, that you had some, perhaps from the Nordics, some kind of telepathic ET influence that nudged you or lit a fire in your mind about this? Because you consumed so much knowledge as a young man, 14, 12, 16, that I don't know that there would be anybody else that would compare with that. And you had so much that when your ships were put on display and some naval personnel saw them, they were in shock. For those of you who are new to this program, they couldn't believe a kid could recreate these models down to the perfect scale from a large ship. And there were secret things that Bill basically projected and put into the designs that he shouldn't have known about. Nobody knew about these things. Go ahead, Bill.
Well,
this is
remarkable. What really hit the Navy, I had the collection in the Broadway department store on Hollywood Boulevard.
Uh-huh.
And we lived in Hollywood at that time. And some Navy fellows happened to be in the store. And they couldn't get over these models. And so they just, one of the two fellows contacted his friend, which was in Naval Intelligence down in San Pedro.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, like we've said before, they came out and confiscated my dad in his office over on Wilshire Boulevard for 2 days and two nights.
Uh-huh.
And then they finally figured out, we're going to go see what the kids got in his house.
Uh-huh.
So they got into our bedroom there. I shared a bedroom with my brother. And they had hundreds of photographs that were in newspaper and magazines.
Uh-huh.
And drawings. What my dad did with us, he took my brother and I down to Long Beach, and we would get on board of the powered, they're very large, they're like a lifeboat, but they're very, very large. You get about 60 people on them.
Uh-huh.
And they would drive everybody out to the ships that were anchored in a brand new breakwater out in Long Beach Harbor. And so people on Saturday and Sunday could visit the ships, and you can walk all over.
Wow.
So what I did, I would get on up on the flight deck, and I would walk the radar image, which was a shadow on the flight deck. And I would walk it one direction and then the other direction. And you couldn't bring cameras on board, but I'd have a little pad, and I'd make it just to those dimensions. I'd put them down. Then I'd walk up to the bow of the Lexington or the Saratoga, because I got to go on both of them.
Mm-hmm.
They were the largest aircraft carriers on the planet at the
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked the steam catapult. So I put those things on the model. And they had recently tripled the anti-aircraft type things from 30 caliber to 50 caliber to 3-inch to 5-inch aircraft guns. And so I would walk the location for those, the width of the round area that it had, and the shield that covered it, shrapnel shield. Then I would put those on the model of the Lexington. So when these fellas saw that model and the others in the Broadway department store, they blew the whistle. Okay, so I'm now first year Hollywood High School, and I'm tapped on the shoulder and asked to leave the room. And the lady escorts me to an office where there are three Navy officers.
Uh-huh.
Two lieutenants and one lieutenant commander. And they essentially put together a program to take me out of school, put me into the Volte Aircraft Company, which was way over in Downey, and while I was getting my secret clearance. And so I worked there for a month or two, and then they shipped me down to San Diego, put me through boot camp. I mean, boot camp, and my orders don't say, now this is World War II, and we're at war. But my orders didn't tell me to go to a training in communications or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Or go immediately to sea. But my mission statement was to go to North Island and report to the commander. And I report to him, and he doesn't do hardly anything. He gets me some documents to read. I don't even see him for a week.
Mm-hmm.
He comes back and gave me some more documents and says, you're in. I got to leave. and he went to sea out in the Pacific. So I then became staff to Admiral Riccobono. But I also had three other bosses, which were full captains. And so I became disseminator of advanced research, okay?
Uh-huh.
The most highly classified program in the country, or possibly even on the planet. And these operatives then would come in, well, actually, the Navy's, the Admiral's aide, because these meetings were always at night, they would tap me, he would tap me on the shoulder, and all he'd do is say, he's here. So I'd get dressed real quick, and he'd escort me back across the base there and go to that big, tall building where Admiral Riccobono had a small office up almost to the top of there. And you can see, it's the command center for the base.
Right.
You can see that building from the beach if you go down to San Diego.
Still there.
And it's still there. And so this went on for 4 years. And so we had these operatives now who are bringing back this information that they don't believe themselves. So the presentations actually ran the gamut, okay? I mean, we would get tremendously excited ones. We'd get others who would come in, and they would just lay the information out. They had sketches a couple of times. They even got some specifications. We got some documents. And strangely enough, this is interesting, some of the information that these operatives brought back from research facilities in Germany were in hieroglyphics.
Oh, how fascinating.
They were in hieroglyphics. Like I've told some of you before, my Uncle Harding was trying to figure out who the Egyptians were and who built the pyramids.
Uh-huh.
And so he had all these hieroglyphics he brought back. He spent many, many trips over there to Egypt and brought all these hieroglyphics
mm-hmm.
and all his other photographs back.
Mm-hmm.
But the operatives then brought back photographs. And you can't believe some of these photographs because it was inside of a UFO. It was showing the landing gear. It was showing the, you would call them a machine gun type of turret.
Right.
Which is not a machine gun. It's like a laser weapon.
Right.
And they had photographs of the control panels. They had photographs of the propulsion system. But actually, nobody knew how this worked. And so, essentially, the reptilians were educating the top technical people in the whole German research centers. Okay? And they then were attempting to take the information and convert it to German and then try to build that communication system or that power system or whatever. And they were having tremendous problem receiving the information and attempting to actually implement it. It wasn't like you had your company got a contract from, say, the Navy to go build so-and-so.
Uh-huh.
So you got a contract. But you got a lot of data that's given to you when you have this contract. The data that's being given to the German research is so complicated, nobody understands any of this. So it took them much longer to do this program and get it to the point where they could put UFOs, all different kinds, in
mm-hmm.
production
mm-hmm.
and go out around the planet and mm-hmm. take over the planet, which was a program. They just couldn't learn fast enough. So this is the reason you didn't win the war. Wait a minute. Everybody says, oh, we win the war. We didn't win the war. It just stopped. And then
I agree.
All of the Germans with paperclip come back over here and implement
They kept right on developing. 9,000 scientists at minimum came over here, and they brought that technology, that data, continued to research it, refine it, develop it, and bring it into a state where they were able to build these things and fly them. And we've got, I'm going to put up a whole bunch of black and white photos of what are allegedly German discs from the late 30s and into the 1940s. Some of the craft, as Bill has said, were direct hand-me-downs from the Draco Reptilians, and the others were built by German technology. But it took them a while to do it. They didn't jump right on it. Now, politically, during the war, anyone who studies the war knows that Adolf Hitler let the British Army escape at Dunkirk, among other things, to try to get the British to agree to peace in the war. He didn't want to fight the British. Hitler had respect for the British. Many in the British monarchy were of German blood. That's the way the royalty worked then. It still is. The House of Windsor, German in origin. So he didn't want to fight the British. He let the entire army be rescued at Dunkirk. He did not invade after the Battle of Britain, Operation Sea Lion. He could have done that. And the British now say that Sea Lion would have been an easy success. He said, they say we had nothing to fight them with. So he could have overrun England easily. Now, that's not to say he would have put half the people to death. He respected the British. He didn't want to harm the British. He wanted them to work with him. He sent Rudolf Hess over there in a BF-110, and he parachuted, did Mr. Hess, onto a farm. Unfortunately, he was captured by the wrong faction of the British government, or we may have had peace in 1942. So there's a lot of political issues involved with this technology, too. And Bill is right on the cutting edge as a young man, 17, 18, 19, listening to these German spies come back, telling these phenomenal, unbelievable stories, and sometimes they had photographs, black and white, granted, grainy, perhaps, drawings. It must have been, you must have felt like you were just living in a different world at times, Bill.
It was a different world. Actually, I had 10 or 12 young ladies who, one typist typed everything that the operative said, and everything that every question that we asked the operative was typed. So then there would be 10 or 12 copies of that particular night and that information. Mm-hmm. And then different young ladies would then take that particular or portion of that and type it into a better program. Uh-huh. And we then would take that and put it into a document. And this document then would be of, say, a communication system that's totally different than anything that we knew about. And our problem was that virtually everything that they brought back was of something that nobody on this planet had ever been given information about, because it was all extraterrestrial, and it's coming from research that the reptilians have been doing for thousands of years. And I think that when you say this was kind of interesting and kind of controlling, it was unbelievably difficult to put these packages together. Then I would put on my flight jacket, go out to the runway, get in the Admiral's plane with the Admiral's pilot, and we would fly to Douglas, or we would fly to Lockheed, or we would fly to China Lake, which incidentally, back then, China Lake didn't even exist for the first year that we were there. And a different group was organized under Admiral Riccobata to build a massive underground research facility at China Lake.
Well, if you look at the pictures,
when I delivered the
Excuse me, what?
Go ahead. I was to say, I've got pictures of China Lake up there, and people can see how desolate it is, and there's just not much there above ground. It's all underground, going back to 1942, 43. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, yes, and so the, like, we've talked about this before, but China Lake was just in its infancy, because it had been programmed with another group that was under Admiral Riccobata. We needed some sort of a massive research facility to try to take this information and attempt to do any phase of it that was a package was given to, say, Lockheed, okay? A similar package, an identical package, was then given to the research people at China Lake. So they're both attempting to understand what this is, figure it out, and see if there's any way if somebody could build one.
Did you ever see or hear of a disc project built by Americans during the war years, or did this come after the war years, after Roswell and the recovery of downed UFOs?
Okay, hold on, and I'll answer that for you. It's going to take me a minute to do it.
Yeah, okay? can you let me do our break here as you just rest for a couple minutes and come back, and we'll pick it up right with that subject in about 5 minutes?
Yes,
I'll do it. All right, very good. Okay, Bill and I will be right back with the remarkable story. Please go to guests, look at Bill Tompkins, and under his name is a China Lake link for you. Take a look at that. It shows you what it looks like from the air, what it looks like from the ground, and there's not a lot to see above the ground. There's an airport there, runway, of course, a couple of them, and some buildings, but 90% of that or more is way underground. We'll be right back with Bill in just a few minutes.